And it is today's Topical Currents, Joseph Cooper with you, Thursday edition. Accidental deaths in the home are more frequent than traffic and workplace fatalities, by far. It might seem easier to stand on a chair to change a light bulb, but a stepladder is much safer. Using the right tool for the job can spare skin knuckles or worse. So joining me now is construction safety professional Dan Hannon. He's written Preventing Home Accidents and joins us from Minneapolis. Hello, Dan. How are you?
Pretty good, Joe. Thanks for having me on.
So are shortcuts the cause of most home accidents, of not taking the extra step, getting things done quick?
That's exactly right. What you find more oftentimes than not, it's our behavior or the actions that we commit that are responsible for injuries, accidents, and even fatalities in the home.
So in the book, I read that it's the big thing that's important is anticipating problems, of kind of taking things mentally step by step. Well, if I do this, such and such could happen, so I need to be prepared there. And tell us more about that process.
Yeah, it really is a very simple and straightforward process, and it involves stopping and thinking about what you're going to be doing and asking yourself, for this task, what are the steps involved? What are the hazards with each of those steps? And then how can I make those hazards go away?
Also, let's touch on power tools. Something like a circular saw or a table saw, major chance of losing fingers, and that you really have to be prepared.
Yeah, very, very dangerous pieces of equipment, obviously, when things are powered by electricity or their purpose is to provide assistance with the task at hand, and it involves some type of electrical or power source. Most oftentimes where injuries happen are people improperly using the piece of equipment. In other words, they're either not familiar with it or they fail to read the manufacturer's directions, or they bypass some of the safety features. How often do you drive by somebody mowing their grass and they've got the discharge chute held in place with a bungee cord to bypass the safety feature that allows them to maybe mow their grass a little bit faster. So it is taking shortcuts, and it's not using those tools for their intended purpose. You gave the illustration of a chair is not a ladder, and likewise a wrench is not a hammer. So safety does start by using the correct tool for the job and to use it according to its intended purpose.
I guess all too often the old adage comes into play of when all else fails, read the instructions.
You know, as a guy, most guys just say, show me a picture, and I'll put it together. And then, yeah, if all else fails, then I'll take a look at the instructions, and hopefully I don't have any pieces and parts left over when I'm done.
So what's the most common screw-up that homeowners make as far as home safety?
If you look at the major causes or sources for injury and even fatalities in the home, falls are at the top of the list, and we're talking about falls from ladders, falls downstairs, falls off of a roof, slips, trips, and falls in areas where there's water, in the northern climates where there's ice buildup, or in some cases where there's oil, greases, and polishes that are being used. So fall hazards are at the top of the list. Other major sources of injuries and even deaths in the home include fire, electrical systems, of course, people trying to do their own wiring are just not smart about how their electrical systems operate. Poisoning, believe it or not, is another large contributor to injuries and fatalities, and that includes children getting access to chemicals or even medications. Unintentional death by even adults improperly medicating themselves results in quite a few deaths every year.
Our telephone number, if you'd like to join in, if you have a comment or a question, we're speaking with construction safety professional Dan Hannon about his book, Preventing Home Accidents. That's easy enough, 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-WLRN, and also email, that's radio@WLRN.org, radio@WLRN.org. Dan Hannon here in South Florida. It's August the 2nd, so we're in the big time of hurricane season, and more injuries occur after the storm than during. How about some gas generator tips for those who might be left without power? Of course, we have to be aware of carbon monoxide.
Right. You know, emergency planning. In fact, I was very purposeful in creating a chapter in the book that I wrote regarding emergency preparedness and planning. And really the three biggies are severe weather or natural disasters, fires, and then medical emergencies in the home. And with respect to hurricanes, of course, making sure that you keep abreast of changing conditions, that you're familiar with the resources in your community and how those can be brought to bear and to assist in time of need. And then personally, of course, putting in place a plan with your family, whether it's in our area, whether it's a tornado or maybe more prevalent in your area with a hurricane, to know where you're going to go and what you're going to do collectively as a family in the event of an emergency. Generators are particularly dangerous in the fact that those people that choose to try to run those indoors are setting themselves up to be potentially poisoned by carbon monoxide. And we see that in the northern climates in the winter with furnaces that aren't running properly. Anytime you have a combustion engine running indoors and exhausting indoors, there's always a potential for carbon monoxide buildup and poisoning.
Of course, when people run generators here after a storm, they're using extension cords to get the AC power indoors, so those cords need to be in tip-top shape. They need to be the orange heavy-duty variety.
Heavy-duty, contractor-grade cords, and if you're using any cord outside, make sure that the cord or the generator system has something called a ground fault circuit interrupter. It's a protector in the event of a short circuit or there's a cut or damaged portion of the cord that your body may come in contact with. This device will basically shut that electrical flow off in a blink of an eye and protect you from getting electrocuted.
Also, with the generators here after a storm, people are slopping around gasoline trying to refill it when the engine is still very hot. So they have a fire hazard there.
Absolutely. You're dealing with a flammable liquid or gasoline or diesel fuel. So there are a handful or a number of different safety concerns when running those generators.
Here in South Florida, so many people have barrel tile ceramic roofs, and they have to be pressure cleaned once or twice a year. Would you recommend someone get a pro rather than who's insured rather than trying to get up there and mess around with a pressure cleaner, which of course has a burst when you pull that trigger to start the water flowing?
Yeah, accessing the roof is particularly dangerous in itself, regardless of what activity you're doing. If you're replacing shingles or, in your area having to pressure wash those that roofing material, just getting up on the roof itself using an extension ladder and then making sure that you don't fall off your roof, trying to keep a low center of gravity. I recommend for those activities to make sure that you get a hold of a professional in your area that can safely do that. Professionals usually have ways of tying themselves off to the roof with the ropes and harnesses and so forth in the event that they do slip and fall. They're not falling to injure themselves or to even fatally injure themselves.
Post-hurricane here in South Florida, I think it's pretty important that people, rather than immediately getting up on the roof and clearing down limbs and debris and that, to just kind of wait it out a little bit and be sensible about it.
That's right.
Tell me also, when someone brings out an extension ladder, is there an accident brewing?
Yeah, most oftentimes there are. The typical course in practicing good sound safety is first, anytime you grab a tool, take a look at it. Visually inspect it for signs of damage or excessive wear. There's something called gremlins. Everybody has probably found an instance in which they use something, they put it away, it was in working condition when they did. The next time they took it out to use it, it's now in a dilapidated condition or something magically has happened and it has caused it to be impaired. So first step is to just inspect it, make sure that all the pieces and parts are working properly. And then with the in the case of the extension ladder, making sure that you're carrying it properly using good lifting techniques so you don't injure yourself with a muscle strain. And then, of course, when you're actually putting the ladder or setting it up against the home, looking up first to make sure you're not going to contact an overhead power line, and then climbing the ladder with using hands and feet together. Most people want to be a little bit more efficient and decide to carry something in one or more hands trying to climb or ascend that ladder, and they lose their balance. And then working from the ladder and making sure that you don't overreach is another cause of injury, where people just need to get a little bit farther out beyond the ladder to reach while they're painting or cleaning out a gutter, and then the ladder winds up sliding and they crash to the ground.
In fact, I saw the tip in your book that you should keep your belly button in the center of the rungs.
That's keeping your stomach or your belly button in between the rails of the ladder is a good practice, and that typically prevents you from overreaching or leaning too far, causing that ladder to slide.
Of course, if you overreach, you wind up only maybe having 1 foot on the rung. And...
That's right, and it's a matter of, again, being safe, being smart, get down, reposition the ladder, move it over another 2 or 3 feet to finish the project.
We're speaking with Dan Hannon, construction safety professional. We're talking about his book, Preventing Home Accidents. Dan, stay with us. We're going to take a short break and be back with more.
Thanks, Joe.
It's Topical Currents on WLRN. The Greater Miami Convention and Visitors Bureau organizes Miami Spice. In August and September, more than 160 Miami Spice restaurants offer three-course lunches and dinners, showcasing some of the best of Miami cuisine. You can experience signature dishes created by Miami chefs and discover the tropical fusion of ingredients that makes Miami dining so out of the ordinary. Details at ilovemiamispice.com.
Next time on South Florida Arts Beat, the Honorable Sandra Grant Griffiths, Consul General of Jamaica at Miami, joins us to share her excitement about Jamaica's 50th golden anniversary of independence. Bill Sauce Boss Wharton hits Key Largo Saturday night to share his latest music and gumbo, and we've got the details. Our calendar features Deborah Margol with enticing Miami-Dade arts events. Catch the conversation and information every Friday on South Florida Arts Beat at 1 o'clock.
We're back, Thursday edition, Topical Currents, Joseph Cooper with you. We resume our conversation with Dan Hannon about his book, Preventing Home Accidents. Dan, how about a website where people can learn more about you and the book? I guess you also have a blog, too.
Yeah, they can certainly take a look at the book through the publisher would be the best way to do it, www.hunterhouse.com. That's HUNTERHOUSE.com. I believe there's some information posted on there about the contents of the book, and they also are making the book available to purchase through their website as well.
We'll also have a link at the Topical Currents Facebook page where people can also see the book. Let's take a call or two, Dan Hannon. This is a Sunrise caller, Larry, and he's got some kind of bad business with a knife.
Yeah, well, it's two things I wanted to point out. One is, after about a week working with a coworker, I borrowed his knife and had a tiny little accident and was on the job. Fortunately, I work for a company that is very, very both understanding and willing to take care of its employees. So they did very much so, and I was fortunate to have an amazing doctor who repaired my damaged nerve. But the point was is that, you know, when you work with somebody for a week and you borrow a knife, chances are good you're going to cut less of what you wanted to and more of you. So one thing I've learned. So know your tools, I think, is the most important thing. But I had the privilege of serving on a county board after Hurricane Andrew. And after Hurricane Andrew, I could say that there were no less than a shortage of houses to be repaired. And there certainly were a shortage of contractors and money. And one of the things that I've noticed was, because I saw people get injured walking on their roofs, putting tarps and all these other things, is and now I work in the trade where I deal with two wholesalers. I deal directly to the trade and mechanical trade. And the battle constantly is between those trained and professionals and those people who think they can do it and make it better. I'm a person who thinks he can make his plumbing better. Yeah, I can change a toilet thing, a switch, a thing. but I'm not going to rip out 8-inch PVC and put in new 8-inch PVC. And I think there's an epidemic in Florida, and I'm sure every contractor and every tradesman will agree with me, that no matter what price there is, there's always somebody willing to do it for $25 less. Now, I think one of the things that I hope you address is the liability of the homeowner, both his own liability and using unlicensed contractors, because you will lose your home if you lose an unlicensed contractor and he gets hurt.
That's very true, Larry. In fact, there's a little segment of the book. One of the chapters addresses the insurance component that homeowners need to really be aware of. As a safety professional, really what we're talking about is managing risk. And managing risk starts with, as Clint Eastwood would say, a man has to know his limitations. And you have to be confident, you have to be skilled and knowledgeable in order to perform some of these repairs where the risk versus reward is very significant, such as working on electrical systems or accessing the roof. You have to know really what you're doing and have that level of skill and confidence that what you're doing is done correctly and done safely. So you're absolutely right. Knowing the nature of the work, knowing what you're getting into, and the risks that are involved are very important. And it's good that your employer is taking care of you. And one of the areas that I think that employers need to really understand is that those off-the-job or away-from-work injuries present a very large exposure, even to an employer. If you look at the cost on an annual basis of on-the-job versus off-the-job injuries, there's no comparison. Off-the-job are those that occur in the home or as a result of automobile accidents are at least 10 times as much as those costs associated with on-the-job injuries. So that exposure and that risk is significantly greater for things that take place away from the workplace.
Tell me, Dan Hannon, about proper shoe wear when you're doing projects. Sometimes I cringe. I'll see someone mowing the lawn with a gasoline mower, and they're wearing flip-flops. And no eyewear.
Absolutely right. You know, and the most embarrassing thing that could probably happen to me would be for me to show up Monday to work with a patch over my eye, having succumbed to a flying object as a result of a home repair project. So I am the safety nerd on my block. So when I mow my grass, it's steel-toed boots, it's safety glasses, earplugs, leather gloves, long pants. I'm doing everything that I can to keep myself safe, even though it's inconvenient and it's not very enjoyable and fun. But footwear is very important. The idea is always to match your attire to the hazards. So if you have a project that involves either potentially cutting your foot or dropping large, heavy objects on your feet, is it smart to wear a protective shoe or footwear? Absolutely. And in the case of dealing with chemicals, how many times have you seen people fertilizing their lawn or applying weed killer with tennis shoes on? And those tennis shoes then are the same tennis shoes that go into their home, that go into their car, that go everywhere else, and they're tracking a small amount of that chemical everywhere they walk. So, again, there's a little section in the book that addresses the personal protective equipment, you know, the eyewear, and the hearing protection, and respiratory protection, and feet and hands, and all those parts of the bodies that we want to keep safe.
Getting back to hurricane season in coastal mm-hmm. areas, is perhaps the most unsafe or the most dangerous power tools the chainsaw? We have people sometimes who want to clear out their yards of limbs and debris, and they're not aware of kickback and wearing proper safety equipment.
Absolutely, absolutely. If you're an infrequent user of any of those power tools, whether they're electric or gas-powered, it always pays to educate yourself to the degree that you can, and that includes reading the owner or the operator's manual. Going online, and I'll give you a really good resource here for chainsaw safety. There's one of the major manufacturers in the United States is Stihl, STIHL. They make the orange, typically the orange chainsaws that you see.
Yeah.
If you go to their website, to the Stihl website, they actually have educational videos that you can sit and watch right from your home computer. talk about best practices and how to cut or fell a tree, or how to cut, in very unique situations, different applications using wedges, and how to establish your safe zone, and a variety of different techniques to use to keep yourself safe. So again, taking it upon yourself, saying, I don't use a chainsaw every day. Let me get smart about this, and just take a few minutes to watch or to call and to educate and inform yourself to the best that you can.
If it's a big job and you're doing a lot of cutting, I guess it's easy to just kind of get complacent. And
it really is. Complacency is one of those human behaviors that we all fall into. We all have habits, and complacency is certainly one of those. Again, understanding your limitations, understanding what's at risk and the hazards involved, knowing when you're in over your head and to call a timeout and to say, yeah, this is beyond my level of expertise and understanding. I need to get a professional involved. It just doesn't pay to save a few dollars, really.
Talking about chemical safety that you touched on, I guess it's always important to beware of chlorine bleach and inhaling those fumes. And you talked about that there are things called Mr. Yuck stickers that you can put on some of the containers of these dangerous chemicals.
I'm old enough to remember the Mr. Yuck campaign. So as a kid, my parents utilized this Mr. Yuck campaign, which is still available through the local poison control centers. You can order up these little green stickers that have a nasty face on them, and it's a visual warning to children, and these stickers are placed on all chemical containers, and it's a visual warning to children to stay away. The stuff inside of this jug or this container is not good to eat or drink or taste or smell, and it's just a visual warning. Of course, if you're really smart about it, you're moving chemical containers into a different cabinet, preferably up high that's locked, where children can't gain access to, but where exposure occurs, especially to adults, is when they don't read the label on the container and the recommended use. And most oftentimes, a use of a noxious chemical will require good ventilation, opening windows and doors and vent fans within the home. And even in some cases, if you can't, having to wear a respirator and making sure that the respirator that you're wearing is the right one for the job.
Of course, here in South Florida, so many people have pools, so they're slopping around with very powerful chlorine and also muriatic acid in that, and that acid has fumes. It is very toxic.
Muriatic acid is really a dilute form of hydrochloric acid. It's about a 10% hydrochloric concentration, and you're absolutely right. Even getting small amounts splashed onto your skin, if it's not washed off right away, it will cause a skin irritation. And if left untreated, even a mild burn, and then the fumes, of course, associated with those are not good. And working in confined spaces, areas that are enclosed, that don't have good ventilation, is just not good safe practices. Read the label, go to a manufacturer's website, and heed all of the precautions and safety measures that the manufacturer is recommending.
Dan, something in the book that struck me is your philosophy of someone who wants to be safe versus having to be safe, and that mindset. Explain that briefly.
The safety mindset, as a safety professional, as one of the earlier callers, I believe Larry had mentioned, practicing safety in the workplace, the employer is constantly battling with the employee to not only conduct their job efficiently, effectively, but also safely. And the ultimate goal is to change human behavior at its core. And that requires us to change our mindset and to think about safety on the job, off the job, in our car, at home. And until you really start to embrace and practice safety 24/7, it's very difficult then to change human behavior. We all have tendencies. We all have traits that very difficult to shake. So it takes practice and it takes a diligence to just stick with it, and you're going to be better off, your family's going to be better off, and the idea, again, is to practice safety 24/7.
I want to thank you, construction safety professional Dan Hannon, and his book is called Preventing Home Accidents. You can find a link there to that book on the Topical Currents website. I'm seeing the Facebook page. Dan Hannon, thank you very much. Great information.
Thanks, Joe. I appreciate the time.
Food and Dining, up next.
Good afternoon. It's WLRN's Topical Currents. Bass Museum of Art presents Beats After Sunset this Friday, August 3rd from 8 to 11 p.m. There's a DJ, specialty cocktails, and the opportunity to enjoy the exhibitions on view, including Charles Ladre, Jillian Mayer, and Florida's only Egyptian gallery. Details at bassmuseum.org. The Theater League of South Florida and WLRN present the WLRN Summer Theater Fest, a tri-county collaboration of youth, community, and equity theater, showcasing some of the best live theater in South Florida. It includes 37 organizations and 87 productions, now through August 31st. A complete listing of organizations and performances can be found at WLRN.org when you click on the Theater Fest icon. The Donkey Show, Miami's hottest pop-up nightclub, is here for a limited time only. It's a disco dream come true on the stage of the Adrian Arsht Center. Studio 54 meets Miami 2012 in what's been described as one of this summer's hottest hits. Dancers, singers, aerialists, and the nation's largest disco ball. Disco fever has taken over Miami. What a party. Information at arshtcenter.org.
Hi, I'm Allison Stewart, host of the new summer series called The TED Radio Hour, Sundays at 7 p.m. Based on talks given by riveting speakers on the world-renowned TED stage, each program is a journey through fascinating ideas, astonishing inventions, fresh approaches to old problems, and new ways to think and create. We explore the impact of ideas and hear excerpts of original TED Talks. Join me for the TED Radio Hour, Sundays at 7 p.m., here on 91.3 WLRN.
Like Topical Currents' Facebook page at facebook.com/topicalcurrents. Join the conversation, post a comment, share links, and see what other listeners are saying at facebook.com/topicalcurrents.
And we return, Topical Currents, Thursday edition. Our food and dining segment has finally arrived. I'm very hungry. I'm joined by colleague, chef, author, syndicated columnist, Linda Gastenheimer. Linda, the high-end restaurant scene is a fascinating place to watch people and to gossip, but of course, you and I would never do that.
Oh, certainly not, but we know who would, and she's going to join us today. Well, if you're looking for the newest restaurant, or where celebrities hang out, or the latest gossip or rumors, here are your sources. You can go to the Velvet Underground, you can go to Scene in the Tropics, or Locally Sourced, and they're all columns that help us keep up on the ever-changing Miami scene. And their author is columnist Leslie Abravanel, and she's here to give us a scoop. Welcome, Leslie.
Thanks, Linda.
Great to have you with us. And we'd love to hear from you, our listeners. Do you have a restaurant or a club question or maybe a suggestion? Give us a call. That's 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN.
And email radio@WLRN.org.
And also with us, our favorite wine guy, Fred Tasker. He's joining us by Skype, and you can read Fred's wine column in today's Miami Herald. Fred, are we drinking today?
We're talking about restaurants and, guess what? Wine.
Oh, all right. What a surprise. Leslie, I love your title, The Velvet Underground. You know, what does it mean? Where'd you get that title?
It's a 60s rock band.
Well, people think that I named it after Lou Reed's band, but I actually took it from my other favorite, Stevie Nicks, so from the lyrics in Gypsy.
Oh.
I just liked how it sounded. But, yeah, the correlation to Lou Reed also kind of worked. So,
well, what does the column tell us?
Well, Velvet Underground covers nightlife events, things going on after dark. whether it's clubs or even restaurants, as long as there's booze and it's dark out, I can write about it.
Well, that sounds exciting.
That's all but my criterion.
That's all you need.
And you mentioned that you scoped the scene for stars in Scandals. So what's going on this week? What's new?
Well, we don't have too many scandals right now. You know, it's summer. But basically, we had some interesting sightings last week when the X Factor judges were in town. They were filming a boot camp of sorts at the Fillmore, and we had Britney Spears and Demi Lovato and L.A. Reid, and it was originally open to the public. And then, long story short, when people got down there, X Factor says, you know what, you can't come in, with no reason given whatsoever. So we like to think that Britney had a meltdown, but we can't really say.
Well, now, how do you handle this? I mean, do you go to all of these places? Where do you get all your info?
I can't tell you that.
Well, just give us a little hint.
Well, I mean, I go to what I go to, and then I have a lot of sources, a network that I've kind of cultivated since, I don't know, I don't even want to say the date, for a long time. A very reliable network, let's just say.
Okay, well, now you have the column called Scene in the Tropics.
Right.
Now, is that similar to the Velvet Underground?
Yeah, I mean, whereas Velvet Underground is about events open to the public and things not always celebrity-related, Scene in the Tropics covers the celebrity scene in Miami, who's where, doing what.
And we have so many celebrities here. Let me ask you, you know, you write about so-and-so was at this restaurant or at that club, and this is what they had. How do the celebrities decide where to go, and are they invited, or do they pay? Do they get paid for doing this?
You know, that's a fantastic question, because as much as we'd love to say that a lot of the celebrities go on their own choosing to certain restaurants, there are some pretty crafty public relations people out there who find out who's coming to town and invite them to eat dinner at one of their clients' places. So, I mean, you know,
on the house.
They'll say no, but typically, yes, because it's good PR for the restaurant. But I was actually shocked to find out recently that two D-list celebrities from one of the Bravo Housewives shows ate at Zuma, and they actually paid the bill, which is kind of shocking.
Oh, was that because they were D-list?
Yeah, well, I mean, it was shocking that they paid to begin with, not necessarily because they're D-list, but yeah, well, let's just say because they're not, like, the biggest names, and I was shocked that they actually paid the bill.
I'm on the Z list.
Well, what about, does money change hands? I mean, do they get paid to come? The top guys, you know?
That, it's such an interesting, very convoluted new scene, you know, down here, where a lot of big companies will pay for celebrities to come show up at events. So these are, we're talking big corporate sponsor events. Like, for instance, you know, the Miami Swim Week was recently, so there were celebrities down here. Nothing major, but a lot of them are given free trips and maybe a little bit of a stipend to be down here. So, you know, they're not really taking much out of their pockets.
Well, let me ask you now, locally sourced. Now, all of these columns, well, the two, Velvet Underground and Scene in the Tropics, that's in the Miami Herald.
Correct.
And locally sourced is on Miami.com?
Yes.
Okay, so what does locally sourced tell us?
Locally sourced is the food and restaurant gossip column that I started sometime back in April on Miami.com covering, like, restaurant gossip. So forget celebrities eating at the restaurants. We're talking about what's opening, who's opening, and all that fun stuff.
I have never seen, so, I mean, tell me if I'm right, so many openings in the summer here in Miami. What's happening?
Yeah, no, it's crazy. Usually everything shuts down during the summer, but I think that a lot of places and people are choosing to use the summer maybe as a trial before the season so they can open up and get the kinks out before all the craziness begins. Kind of makes sense.
Well, yeah, but they've got to have a lot of capital to carry them through to the season,
this
especially since
true.
We could come into the hurricane season here and all.
No, you're right. I mean, first we started out with a spate of closings with, you know, Sustain was the first one. Everyone was shocked that that closed. Then Senora Martinez.
Well, right. Now, Sustain is in Midtown. Is that
correct?
And I understand that another restaurant's taking it over. What's happening there?
Well, as I like to say, my sources tell me, and it's not 100% confirmed, but it's 99.9% that Sugar Cane, which is Sustain's neighbor, has signed a lease to take the space and is going to turn that space into an Italian concept.
Didn't we have the sugarcane chef on
a few weeks ago? Yeah, Timon. Well, it's really a shame because Sustain was, you know, all of this eco-friendly food, and they spent so much money on that location.
They did. They really did. And it was really a big shock when it closed because, you know, to all the critics and everything, it was critically acclaimed. But I guess it just never, you know, no pun intended, was able to sustain what they spent and sit there. It was a shame. But
I like your pun.
It was inevitable. Sugarcane seems to be able to do that. So we'll see what happens. But they're being very coy. They're not saying anything.
Well, and then Signora Martinez, Michelle Bernstein has been such a great success. What happened there?
Well, again, I mean, there were people saying that she closed because she couldn't compete with Jose Andres on South Beach, which I think is a little ridiculous because she was there first. She held her own. But apparently it wasn't doing the business that it should have been doing, and it wasn't too busy. So I guess Michelle did the smart thing and decided to focus elsewhere and close it up. It was a shame. People were very surprised, but then the insiders weren't that surprised. So
right, but, I mean, she's nowhere near the South Beach.
Right, exactly. So I thought that theory was a little suspect.
So I understand that there's maybe a big, big name from California coming here?
We can only hope, but it's going up and down like the stock market right now. I mean, first we're told, okay, Thomas Keller, French Laundry, Bouchon, he's coming to Miami. We're told this. We hear it. He may be going somewhere near Brickell. We don't know. So anyway, the rumor swirling now is that Keller is going to take over spaces in the Mandarin.
The Mandarin Oriental Hotel.
Correct.
On Brickell. Yeah.
Correct.
On Brickell Key.
Joel Huff had vacated that seat a few months ago. Joel Huff left abruptly. And while Azul is holding its own, I've been told that Keller has been sort of sniffing around and is close to signing a deal. That's one side of it. The other side is saying, no, it's not going to happen at all. Keller's people are saying, we're not commenting on anything.
Well, you know, I wonder sometimes, kind of like the White House in this sense, that they put these feelers out, they put these rumors out, and they want to hear what people think. Maybe that's helping them to make their decision. What do you think?
Yeah, it could be like the culinary wag the dog, you know, like let's create some hype and see what happens. It makes some sense. But then again, someone like Thomas Keller, I don't think he needs to do that. But what can I say? I don't know. I mean, he hasn't told me anything, so.
Well, we want everyone to know it's rumor, correct?
Exactly. It's all rumor, yeah. And it's fun to speculate, but right now there's nothing written in stone, so.
All right. Well, I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and my guest today is Velvet Underground columnist Leslie Abramoville. We'll take a short break here, and we'll be back with more. And we're back. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. Leslie Abravanel writes The Velvet Underground, Scene in the Tropics, columns for the Miami Herald, and locally sourced column for Miami.com. And she's also the author of Fromer's Florida. She's been giving us the scoop on social and restaurant scene. Lots of new happenings here, always. But it's dinner in minutes time. And today's dinner is a cool, refreshing berry and pasta and steak salad. Steak, it's your happy day, Joe.
Another salad, and with the steak and also the berries and the arugula.
What do you mean another salad?
And the scallions I taste in there.
You sourced it out, huh? Mm-hmm.
Does it really count as a salad if it has steak in it?
There were lots of it, too. Very good from Fresh Market.
Wow.
Sorry about that, Fred. You just have to bear up under it.
I guess so.
I sent you the recipe. You could make it for yourself.
I'm ready.
Okay. Well, it's a one-dish meal, and actually it can be ready in 15 minutes. And all kinds of berries are at the height of their season right now, and they add a sweet flavor to this very tangy salad dressing. The salad dressing is made with some horseradish, Dijon mustard added to mayonnaise. And the secret here is I add a little water to the sauce, and it makes the mayonnaise a smooth coating sauce rather than a bit very, very thick, so it's nice and light. So, of course, first you have to cook the pasta, and I used fusilli, which is a corkscrew pasta. Any short-cut pasta would work. While the pasta cooks, you could sauté the steak. I used strip steak, but any kind of tender meat can be used. A thermometer should read 145 degrees if you like it medium rare, or 160 for medium.
Did you really use a thermometer for the steak temperature?
I always do.
I bet she eyeballed it.
No, I use a thermometer. The only other way is cut into it and have a look. I know you can press your finger on it and decide my finger's never worked. I put that over salad greens, sprinkled the berries on top, scallions or chives on top of that. Very, very simple recipe. The complete recipe is at dinnermiz.com. And by the way, if you don't want to even cook the steak, buy some deli roast beef and add it to the salad. Another quick recipe, mustard-crusted chicken with a summer herb salad, is in today's Miami Herald. And please, you can follow me on Twitter. It's at L. Gassenheimer. Fred, you're making a lot of noise there. What's going on?
Oh, too many things going on here.
The WWF up in Michigan, I think.
What's happening? Are you already started drinking?
No, somebody was knocking at the door. Right at the perfect timing. Isn't that lovely?
Okay. You got to lock your door. Fred is joining us by Skype, and he's enjoying himself up in Upper Michigan.
Yeah, I heard you guys have 104 heat index. We got about, 76, 78, something like that.
All right, just talk to me in the winter, Fred. Fred, what are we drinking?
Well, Leslie says you can't have scandals without booze. And I'm hoping that wine qualifies for that, too, because I wanted to talk about a couple of my favorite restaurant wine programs in Miami. A couple of them that could hardly be any more different from each other, and that is one at Captain's Tavern in Pinecrest and one at The Forge in Miami Beach. Now, Captain's Tavern is a seafood restaurant that sells everything from Great Ipswich steamers to lobster without the shell poached in chervil butter, which just sounds marvelous. But what I like about the wine list are the prices. And I counted up, and 91 of the 323 wines on the list are under $30. And a lot of restaurants in Miami don't have any wines under $30. So this is
right. We've
really
talked about
unusual.
That. Fred, we've talked about that a lot, that you feel that the restaurant should at least have something in that price range.
Yeah, if somebody wants to go for volume rather than high markups, I think they could do very well, and these people do it excellently. And what's also unusual there is that Bill Bowers, who is the founder and the owner of Captain's Tavern, is a red wine lover at heart. So he runs a fish restaurant, and yet 65% of his wines are red. So he wants to drink what he wants to drink. He even has the famous William Selyem Pinot Noirs that have cult status in America because they're so great and they're very hard to find. But Bowers has a secret for finding wines like this, and that is once a year he packs up a whole bunch of Florida stone crabs and heads out to California's wine country and throws a party for the local winemakers. So when it comes time to buy wine, Bill is everybody's friend.
First on the list, huh?
Yeah, he knows what he's doing. He has pictures on his wall of himself with Gina Gallo and people like that. It's very, very cool. The other wine program I like is pretty different. It's the Wine by the Glass program at the Forge restaurant in Miami Beach. Now, there they have 80 wines by the glass protected by an enigmatic pouring system that keeps the wine fresh until the last glass is sold. That's one of the biggest programs like that I know of. And it's really varied. You can get for $8 a glass, you can get a nice friendly Australian red made of Grenache, Mourvèdre, and Syrah. Or if you want to plump down $102 for a glass of wine, you can get
for one glass?
For one glass of wine.
Okay.
But you get the 1999 Chateau Haut-Brion from Bordeaux. So if you want to impress your date, that ought to do it.
Well, they also have, what impressed me was that near all the wines by the glass area, they've got an iTouch that you can go to, and you can, or maybe it's an iPad, and look up the wine and see what it is before you buy it.
Yeah, they have really thought this thing through. And actually, it's not just wine. They have 8 sakes by the glass, 8 beers on tap, and 39 by the bottle, and even a selection of 5 non-alcoholic wines. And I didn't even know they had 5 non-alcoholic wines. But anyway, now if you're thirsty, you know where to go.
All right. Sounds good to me. Leslie, tell us, You know, we were talking earlier about how much money people spend on restaurants, and then they open and then they close. And I'm thinking in terms of that restaurant au Pied de Cochon, the Pied de Cochon.
Yes.
They spent millions on that restaurant. I think it was less than a year that it was open.
Yeah, I don't think it was even half a year that it was open. I remember it opened in the summer again, and closed.
It closed before the Christmas season.
It closed right around December.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that was a shame. They spent a fortune.
But now I understand a restaurant called Gloutonnière is going in there, and instead of using that beautiful facility, they're tearing it apart.
Well, I took French in high school, and my teacher would kill me. I have no French accent, so I just call the place Gluttony. And seriously, if you think about what they put into that, and I don't know the numbers, but it makes sense that, you know, the name fits. They tore up everything that au Pied had and rebuilt it, and again, did a similar thing. Opened in the summer, and I wish them the best of luck. But yeah, they're another one spending a fortune.
Right, and I wonder, who are the people who invest in these restaurants? Because it's hard to get investors.
Yeah, this is a place I think they hail from Mexico City. I don't really know the background as far as the financials, but obviously they have deep pockets.
Right, well, we only have a half a minute left, but I also understand that Turnberry Isles Bourbon Steak is thinking of the Fontainebleau. Is that true?
Well, Bourbon Steak is going to remain put. Obviously, it does really well where it is, but I've been told that Michael Mina is looking into possibly opening his second Miami restaurant at the Fontainebleau, and it makes sense because it's all within the Sofer family. So that should be something interesting.
But isn't there a steak restaurant there already?
There is. Gotham Steak is there. So we don't know if it's going to be a steak restaurant per se, but at this point, Fontainebleau is not commenting. They're saying that they've spoken to many chefs from all over the country, and we'll see what happens with that. But
well, Leslie, great info or non-info, I say. Well, if any of our listeners want to find out more about what's going on every week, every day, Leslie, they can find you at the Miami Herald or Miami.com. Is that right?
That's right, and I'm on Twitter at Leslie Abravanel, so I'm all over the Internet.
Well, they'll have to go look up your name, how to spell it.
Yeah, they'll find it.
Okay. Another great, tasty week. Leslie Abravanel, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And Fred Tasker, great advice as always.
Always a pleasure.
Well, next week we're going to be talking with Chef James Lewis. He's from Batola Restaurant in Alabama, and there's a kind of new Alabama cuisine.
Alabama, huh?
Alabama. Well, it's not fried chicken anymore.
No,
there.
No.
So I got to find Alabama wine.
Get busy, Fred Tasker.
I have to be very busy, I think.
I'm Linda Gassenheimer. Join me then.
Wraps up today's program. Our producer is Richard Ives. Technical direction from Bonnie Berman. Paul Leary gives production assistance. Tomorrow at 1, it's Ed Bell and the South Florida Arts Beat. Monday, we return with El Nuevo Herald columnist Daniel Shore Roth. He chronicles the underdogs in South Florida. Today's recipe, dinnerinminutes.com. Also, author and book links, staff photos, discussion, and much more at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Also, find free audio archives and MP3 downloads at our website. That's WLRN.org. And to the calendar, on this day in 1876, 136 years ago, gunfighter Wild Bill Hickok is murdered in a saloon in one of my favorite towns, Deadwood, South Dakota, shot by Jack McCall, who was hanged for the deed. Aces and eights. And also on this day in 1924, 88 years ago, the birth in Harlem of author and civil rights leader James Baldwin. He died in 1987. Go tell it on the mountain. One more while we ponder Cliff Robertson, Robert Culp, and Robert Blake and the movie PT-109. On this day in 1943, 68 years ago, John F. Kennedy's motor torpedo boat is rammed, cut in half, and sunk by the Japanese destroyer Amagiri in the South Pacific. So we leave with a thought from James Baldwin, who was a preacher from age 14 to 16. Quote, "Money, it turned out, was exactly like sex. You thought of nothing else if you didn't have it, and thought of other things if you did." This is Joseph Cooper. Thanks for making Public Radio your companion today. Stay tuned now for the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.